It is a great honor and privilege and pleasure to be with all of you for this wonderful celebration, Kirtan 50. For the last days, we have been relishing chanting the holy names and hearing talks about Krishna and serving devotees in various ways. When Nityananda Prabhu asked me to select a topic for a seminar, I thought of the topic, Secrets of Success and Failure in Krishna Consciousness. Srila Rupa Goswami has written a short book called Sri Upadesh Amrita. It consists of only 11 verses. And in the 11 verses, he tells us exactly how to progress from the beginning stages of Krishna consciousness to the most advanced. And he also tells us the things that will ensure our complete success and the things that will destroy our spiritual progress. And so I thought to discuss both of these. In one verse, he describes six items, sadbhi bhakti prasidyati. These items ensure our complete success in devotional service, and that sadbhi bhakti vinashyati. These other six destroy our spiritual progress. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who was a great acharya in our line, wrote 12 essays, one for each of the six items that ensure our success, and one for each of the six items that cause disturbances. And those 12 essays have been put together in a book called Sri Bhakti Loka. And this book very wonderfully analyzes Rupa Goswami's instructions and tells us how we can apply them in our lives. So one of the six items necessary for success in devotional service is dharya. Utsaha nischaya dharya. Does anyone know the meaning of dharya? Patience. Yes, patience. So we'll begin reading about patience, and that will lead us to other discussions, which will also be very instructive. Dharya, patience. For the practitioner of devotional service. Now, this book is specifically written for practitioners of devotional service. And I assume or hope that that includes all of us here. For the practitioner of devotional service, dharya, patience, is extremely necessary. Those who possess the quality of dharya are called dhira, sober. Due to lack of this quality, men become restless. Those who are impatient cannot do any work. Now, some of the senses are quite clear in and of themselves, but some do require some discussion. So those who are impatient cannot do any work. What does that mean? I'm sure there are many people in Dallas and throughout the world who have to go to work and they get stuck in traffic. And they may be very impatient, but they have no choice because they're stuck in traffic. But they still go to work. So what does it mean, those who are impatient cannot do any work? This refers to internal work. If we're impatient, if we want results immediately and we're not prepared to invest the time and energy in doing our internal work, then we can't make progress. In the first verse, by the quality of dharya, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. By the quality of dharya, or patience, the practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. There is one history described in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavata and other literatures about Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami was the only son of the two brothers, Hiranya Majumdar and Govardhan Majumdar. And those two brothers were fabulously wealthy. They were like, practically like kings. And naturally, because Raghunath Das was the only son, they put all their hopes in him to manage the family's property and business. Now, they were considered to be materialistic devotees. They were devotees. And they were very generous. In fact, it's said that almost the whole Brahmin community of that district were maintained by the largesse of Govardhan and Hiranya Majumdar. And so many many saintly persons would visit them, and they would arrange satsangs, gatherings for discussions on the holy name. Srila Haridas Thakur was one of the regular visitors to participate in those gatherings. So Haridas taught, so the family priest of the Majumdars was Balaram Acharya. So they were connected to Balaram Acharya and Yadunanda Acharya. And it so happened that Haridas Thakur came to stay in a village near the Majumdars with Balaram Acharya. So Hiranya and Govardhan Majumdar thought, oh, this is a great opportunity. Raghunath Das was just like a schoolboy. We'll send him to Haridas Thakur to get blessings. Because they thought that by Haridas Thakur's blessings, their son would be successful. Many people approach saintly persons for blessings. So he sent bullock carts laden with valuable presentations along with Raghunath to Haridas Thakur, thinking that if I please him with all these opulent gifts, he'll give a very good blessing to my son. And of course, Haridas Thakur had no interest whatsoever in those presentations. So, Raghunath came before Haridas Thakur and So Balaram Acharya, he knew the mood of Haridas Thakur, that he's not going to give material blessings like what Govardhan and Hiranya wanted. So there were all sorts of, you know, guards and employees of the Muslim guards. So Haridas Thakur, he understood that he must bless this boy. So, but Balaram Acharya knew he wouldn't give any material blessing, and that would upset the boy's father and uncle. So right when he was about to give the blessing, Balaram Acharya made a very loud noise, like coughing, so no one could hear the blessing. And the blessing was that you will not have any material opulence. So Raghunath, everyone went back, and so, you know, Hiranya and Govardhan were like very eager to know, did he give my son a blessing? And they all said, yes, I think he did. And he said, well, what was the blessing? I said, well, you know, I don't know. We couldn't hear what the blessing was. So the blessing was that you will be able to, you know, control your senses. You'll be completely materially detached. And by by controlling your senses and being completely detached materially, you'll be able to control the world. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying here. So they told him that the blessing is that your son that will, they didn't give the full blessing, to repeat the full blessing, your son will control the whole world. So his parents were over the moon. They're thinking, we just control this one district in Bengal, and we have so much opulence, and he's going to control the whole world. We can't even imagine how, and they were just like so happy. But he could do that because he was not allured by anything material. If we're allured by material prospects or material facilities, we'll come under their control. The only way we won't come under control is if we have no attachment or aversion. And if we're really fixed in Krishna consciousness. So that is the secret here, that one who has the quality of patience, dharya, that means one who is dhira, dhiras tatra nuyate. Dhira means he doesn't identify with the body. And he's not bewildered by any change of the body, even death. Dhiras tatra nuyate. So if he's not disturbed by death, which is the greatest calamity in the material world for an ordinary person, then he won't be disturbed by anything. He won't be controlled by anything. He can control himself and he can control the world in the sense that he can use everything in Krishna's service, engage everything. In the first verse of Sri Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of dharya are explained. Does anyone know the first verse in Sanskrit? Raise your hand. Yes.
Vacha vegam manasa krodha vegam hitva vegam udaropastha vegam etan vegan yogashaheta dhira sarvan imam pratvimsa shishya.
Very good. Dhira. That describes dhira. A sober person. Thank you, Govindacharya Prabhu. A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, that's vacho vegam, the mind's demands, manasa, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So the first is vacho vegam, that is the urge to speak. And how many of us have the urge to speak? Everyone does, because it's natural. But how we speak and about what we speak, that is very important. So, with a desire to speak more, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is starting with that. With a desire to speak more, a person becomes talkative. If speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. Now this is a very important point, which Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur will elaborate on, and that is talking about others. And here talking about others means in a negative way. And so if speech is not regulated, and one talks about others, it will lead to enmity. And we can easily understand how that takes place. I have heard or seen something about someone that is not very complimentary. So I tell one person that, do you know what I, and you know, dot, dot, dot. Really? Oh yeah. And it's worse than that. Dot, dot, dot. Oh my God. But don't tell anyone. I'm just telling you because you're my, you know, special friend. So everyone has their special friends. So he or she thinks, well, he told me because I'm his special friend. So that means I can also tell my special friend. So then I go to my special friend. Did you know that? But don't tell anyone. And then that person thinks, well, you know, she told me, I have my special friend. I can just tell one person. And in that way, it goes around. And it could very well end up reaching the ears of the person who is the subject of the gossip. And so enmity is created. And then there's many levels of enmity. Because, you know, the first person, well, I told that person not to tell you. Why did he tell someone? And then it's like, and you don't know who else has heard it. So you're like, you become suspicious, like, does that person know? You know, how far has this gone? And if you get caught in this web of doubt and suspicion and ultimately enmity. We have to be careful here. So, if speech is not regulated, then enmity arises from talking about others. To speak uselessly is the business of a fool. But out of a desire to unnecessarily engage in speech, the materialists always waste time and face so many distresses. I mean, this is the whole world. I mean, to some extent, we lead a sheltered life in the temple, in the association of devotees. But I've heard from devotees who work in the material world that one of the biggest hardships is listening to the talk of the fellow people in the workplace. You know, they gather around whatever, the water fountain, and they just talk, you know, unnecessarily. And it's very disturbing to a sincere devotee to listen to that. And His Holiness Niranjan Swami has spoken on this topic. In fact, I once he visited Santa Barbara and spoke briefly about it. And he describes how Before he became a devotee, he was a construction worker. And like the consciousness of the people on the construction crew was so low. And it's like whenever they saw, I mean, I shouldn't be saying it here, but whenever they saw like a lady walk by, they'd all say, "Phew, did you see that?" I mean, there's a verse, beautiful verse, that devotees should be attracted to talks of Krishna, just like materialists are attracted to talks of the opposite sex. Because whatever is in our mind, that will come out of our mouth. So they're thinking of that, and so as soon as one walks by, they say, "Hey, did you see that one?" And then, you know. So in the same way, devotees should be always thinking of Krishna, and then any little provocation, they talk about Krishna. Like we heard in Govinda Maharaj's beautiful talk this morning. When Gop Kumar saw the color of dark blue, he thought it was Krishna. And that came out. So the practitioners of devotional service should not speak unnecessarily. If you do have to speak unnecessarily, then better to keep quiet. In other words, there's no exception. There's no way out. Besides topics regarding Krishna, all other topics are unnecessary. Now this may seem extreme, and later Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains under what circumstances one may actually have to talk about other topics, because you can't really live in the world. If someone was like a Babaji at Govardhan, he could avoid it, you know. But especially householders, and even people who have responsibility in a spiritual organization, they may have to talk about others. But that also has to be very carefully controlled, as we will read. To speak about subjects favorable to devotional service is not unnecessary. Therefore, devotees should speak only on topics about Lord Hari, for those favorable to such topics. All other topics will be counted in the category of the urge to speak. One who is able to control the urge to speak is a sober person. Now, so, I'll come now to the exceptions, because otherwise it might seem nice in theory, but difficult to apply. So now Bhaktivinoda Thakur comes to one of the six topics that are unfavorable to devotional service. The topic of prajalpa. Does anyone know the meaning of prajalpa? Raise your hand. Yes?
Speaking unnecessary.
Yes, prajalpa, speaking unnecessary. Actually, Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur explained that jalpana, speaking, is natural. And even there's, you know, in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there's the wonderful story of Uddhava when he comes to Vrindavan to deliver the message of Krishna. And eventually he meets Radharani and the gopis. And there's a bumblebee hovering around Radharani. And she starts to talk to that bumblebee as if it was Krishna or a representative of Krishna. And those, quote, mad talks are analyzed by Rupa Goswami, different types of ecstasy. And one of those is called prajalpa, but that's like transcendental prajalpa. So yes, talking about Krishna, that's wanted, that kind of jalpana is wanted. But talking unnecessarily about others, there are many varieties of prajalpa, but this talking unnecessarily about others is the most dangerous. The most dangerous. Talking without reason about other people is extremely adverse to devotional service. Many people talk about others to establish their own reputation. So what is that psychology? Did you hear about, you know? And then we say something bad about the other person. The psychology is that we want to make ourselves look good. I mean, it doesn't really work that way with advanced devotees, but by making others look bad, we think we'll look better. And this is actually, this actually comes to the basic desire, false desire of the conditioned soul, which is to take the place of Krishna. When we heard this morning again about the Mahatattva and the creation. So at the beginning, there's the Mahatattva. It's like a sort of undefined spiritual energy. And the first creation is false ego. Because the living entity by nature is the eternal servant of Krishna. And people in the consciousness of eternal servitorship to Krishna are in the spiritual world. So when we come to the material world, we need a different identity. And that is called false ego. So there's this undifferentiated matter, and then we need a new identity, so that's false ego. And then, by contact with the mode of goodness, the mind is created. By contact with the mode of passion, intelligence is created. Contact with the mode of ignorance, the senses are created. So we all have this consciousness that we want to be the supreme. Srila Prabhupada gave the example that a mother is cooking in the kitchen, and the child wants to also cook. But the child is too small. If she actually touches the fire, she'll burn herself. So the mother arranges like a toy set of kitchens. I've seen it. We have many friends, and their daughters have their little kitchen set, and we visit them, and they offer us their wooden bananas and whatever. So okay, you can't really cook, you know. But okay, we'll give you a toy set. You can play at cooking. So we can't really be Krishna. So Krishna, okay, we'll give you this toy world, and you can play at being Krishna. And every person in the material world comes with that false ego of wanting to be the supreme. And Parijan Prabhu says it's like you have six, and that's every living entity in every species, but even if you just take the humans, say that's like six billion people walking around, and each one internally is really feeling, please wait, I have an important announcement to make. I am the center of the universe, and everyone should act only for one purpose, which is to make me happy. And everyone should do exactly what I say and want. So you can imagine this, we have like 6 billion people, and everyone is saying, wait a minute, I have a very important announcement to make. I'm the center of the universe. You all should just do what I want to make me happy. So that's false ego. And the mind is like the agent of the false ego. It serves the false ego in the conditioned state. And the mind has two basic functions, very simple functions. You can say? Yes. Accepting and rejecting on the basis of false ego. I want this for my happiness. I don't want this. And it just goes back and forth, accepting and rejecting, and it can, one minute it'll accept something, and the next minute it'll reject the same thing. So the mind is also very important. Vacho vegam manasa vegam. But the principle is the same for both, and if time permits, we might discuss a little about the mind in particular. But it's the same idea, that the mind should be engaged in Krishna. Otherwise, it should not be engaged in anything else. So, this speaking ill of others, what we basically want to do is we want to establish that we're the supreme. That's the underlying psychology. And so, if we, you know, well, this person has that fault, so he's not the supreme, and that person has that fault, so she's not the supreme. And like we find fault with everyone. Okay, they're not the supreme, they're not the supreme, they're not the supreme. Well, I guess there's only one person left. Guess who that is. So, yeah, but it's... We laugh, but it's serious. Being envious, I mean, we're here because we're envious of Krishna. Being envious, some people are accustomed to discuss others' character. The minds of those who are busy in such topics can never be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So this is why we're here, to be fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, the holy name, and the deities and the scriptures. But if we busy ourselves in these topics out of envy, and envy is the basis, we will never be able to fix the mind on the lotus feet of Krishna. In other words, this is one of the secrets of failure, prajalpa. And there are many varieties of prajalpa, and specifically speaking about others. Talking about others should be rejected in all respects. But in the practice of devotional service, there are many favorable topics that are faultless, although they are about others. In order to completely renounce talking about others, one needs to live in the forest. And some people do that. But it's not practical for most. The two different types of practicing devotees are the householders and the renunciates. Because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. Unless you're an ISKCON. And have responsibility. Sometimes it's our service. But in the typical renunciate who just lives in the forest, he can give up talking about others completely. Yes, because the renunciates have no business whatsoever with sense enjoyment, they can give up talking about others in all respects. But because a householder is engaged in earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining the family, he cannot completely give up talking about others. It is best for him to live in a Krishna-conscious family. When all one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. In other words, as Srila Prabhupada said, that we need to earn enough to keep the body and soul fit for serving Krishna. Everything in the house, and our spouses and our children, and you know, everything ultimately is meant to be engaged in Krishna's service. When Srila Prabhupada was in Bombay, he gave a beautiful talk to life members in which he quoted a song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in the song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that when I chant the holy name, my home becomes transformed into the spiritual world. And Srila Prabhupada was encouraging them that devotees are so powerful that they can make the spiritual world manifest by their chanting and hearing about Krishna. And he quoted the verse, Naham Tishtami Vaikuntha. Krishna says, I'm not in Vaikuntha. A yoginam hidayeshuva. I'm not in the heart of the yogi. But I am there wherever my devotees are chanting my glories. So you can transform your home into Goloka Vrindavan by chanting and hearing about Krishna. So, When one's material activities are related with Krishna, then even his unavoidable talk about others becomes sinless and a part of devotional practice in relation to Krishna. Because he has to earn, he has to save some money, he has to protect his family members and property, he has to do all those things. But the ultimate goal is Krishna. He should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. So this applies not only to talking about devotees, it includes talking unnecessarily about anyone. And people who distribute books or just interact with people in general often are reminded about how fallible their judgments are. You know, how often they're wrong when they pass a negative judgment on someone. I mean, I catch it in myself. I'll be walking, I'll see someone, and being the center of the universe, I feel everyone should look the way I want them to look, they should dress the way I want them to dress, they should walk the way, you know, everything should be just the way I want it. So I'll see someone and I'll think, oh gosh, what is that? And then, you know, then the person will come up and smile and say, Hare Krishna. I'm like, oh man, how wrong could I be? You know, again, Krishna's teaching me again. You know, don't see faults in others. They may not even be there. Ordinary people, so-called ordinary people. That he should not talk about others in a way that is detrimental to anyone. He should talk about others only whatever little is necessary in his Krishna conscious family. He should not talk about others without reason. All right, so now that's for the householders. And then there's another exception. Moreover, when a guru enlightens his disciple on some topic, then unless he occasionally talks about others, his instruction may not be clear. So sometimes we have to give a negative illustration to make the positive more clear. When previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, there is merit in such talk, not fault. As Shukadeva Goswami said in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.1.3.4, and he quotes the Sanskrit, but we're not. The lifetime of such envious householders is passed at night either in sleeping or in sex indulgence, and in the daytime either in making money or maintaining family members. Persons devoid of Atma Tattva do not inquire into the problems of life. So he's not speaking about a particular person, but a category. And it's necessary that this is what you should be like and this is what you should not be like. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very analytical. So there's a general category. That's one way of talking about others. Another way is you speak about someone, a specific person, but you don't mention the person's name. That's another way. And a few people will know who you're talking about, but depending on the audience, the others won't know. And it may even happen that someone will speak about a person by name, but there are like really conditions for this. Because you might think, oh well, You know, I've almost been suffocating here, thinking I can't talk about others. Now, there's a loophole here. I can speak about others to illustrate a point about what you shouldn't be like. So we go around, you know, this person is really bad, you know. You shouldn't be like that person. I mean, you definitely don't want to be like that person. That person is like really bad. So, now, what are the conditions that under which one can speak about others? This is very important. Because if we don't meet the condition, then we should keep quiet. Okay, so there's more, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives different examples of previous Mahajans who have spoken about others to make clear the point. And then he says, you know, unless one speaks in this way while instructing and while concluding a subject, there's no benefit for oneself or others. Therefore, when the previous acharyas have personally set examples and taught others, how will we be benefited by acting contrary to their instruction? So there are people who think that you shouldn't criticize anyone. This is very common. I don't know about here, but in India we met many people who thought like you shouldn't criticize others. And they criticized Srila Prabhupada because he criticized others. They're like setting themselves up as superior because like they don't criticize. So I'll give one example from Juhu. Srila Prabhupada had a friend named Dr. Patel. If you've ever read, well, even in Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita or, you know, the conversation books or listen to the tapes, almost every morning Srila Prabhupada would walk on Juhu Beach and he would discuss with Dr. Patel. And Dr. Patel was, anyway, he and Prabhupada used to argue a lot back and forth. So, Dr. Patel brought up like a popular spiritual figure in India. And Prabhupada, he just pointed out why that person is not really accepted as an authority. And there are many, I don't need to go into the details. But Dr. Patel became livid. I mean, the way Prabhupada spoke, it really offended his sentiment for that so-called spiritual leader. And they got into like a huge argument. I mean, it was so bad that Prabhupada was shouting at Dr. Patel. Dr. Patel was shouting back. And Dr. Patel's cronies, they were like trying to separate him. And, you know, don't upset Swamiji. He has a heart condition. It's not good. And but he just kept going. You know, it reminded me of like in the boxing ring, like the bell rings and the round is over, but they keep smashing each other, and the referee's trying to separate them, and their people from their corners, you know, trying to drag them back to their corners. Like they just kept going, and then. So then after that, Srila Prabhupada said, okay, now no more discussion on the morning walks. We'll just read Krishna book. And for the first time in, I think, a few years, Dr. Patel didn't come to accompany Srila Prabhupada on his walk. But then, after maybe two days, three days, the way Dr. Patel describes it, like Prabhupada was walking in one direction from one side of the beach, and Dr. Patel the opposite direction on the other side. Something inside Dr. Patel like forced him to come to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And like he bowed to Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet, and he said, I'm sorry, Srila Prabhupada, but... but I've been taught to respect all the accredited saints of India. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. And I have been taught to say who is a saint and who is not a saint. So Bhaktivedanta Thakur, not here but in Harinam Chintamani, he says that yes, one should not criticize others, but one may, for a good reason, and it, as we'll read, with the proper consciousness, criticize others. And if someone criticizes someone for rightly criticizing someone else, then that person should be avoided. But that was another thing that Prabhupada didn't stop Dr. Patel from coming. But this is the point, that sometimes you may have to criticize others. But conditions apply. Those who talk about others, so here are the conditions, while influenced by devotional impediments, like envy, hatred, pride, or the desire for distinction, are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. So we're trying to get the favor of Bhakti, we're crying, dying for Bhakti. But if we talk about others while influenced by these impediments, we're offenders. So it may happen, and that we see something wrong. You know, some devotee may actually need to be corrected. But we should not attempt to do that correction if we are influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, the desire for distinction, and so on. But we can go to someone who we feel is free or relatively free from these impediments and say, this is what I'm seeing. So the first thing is, what I'm seeing, is it really there? This is what I'm seeing. Is it really like that, or is it just my own envy that makes me see it like that? So that's why it's very important that we have confidential relationships. That's also here. Guyam akiti prichiti. We have to have people that we can confide in who won't talk about others. You know, who we can genuinely reveal our mind to. I'm seeing this in this devotee. It doesn't seem right, but am I just seeing it? Is it just my own prejudice or my own envy? And then that maybe more advanced or more pure-hearted devotee can help us see it in perspective. And then if maybe there is some need for someone to speak to the devotee, you know, find someone who can do it in a way that, you know, it will be more likely received well by the devotee. You know, don't take it upon yourself if you're influenced by these impediments or if it's not your service. speech in the form of blaspheming sadhus is the source of great inauspiciousness. In the Ten Offenses, Satam Ninda Paramo, it's like blaspheming devotees is the supreme offense. In other words, it's the worst offense. If one wants to attain devotion to Lord Hari, then he should make a vow like this. Quote, in this life I will never blaspheme sadhus. Devotees are sadhus. By blaspheming them, all one's virtues are destroyed. And we can feel it in the kirtan. It said that the mercy of the holy name recedes when there's blasphemy of devotees, and it, even if it's on a subtle platform, it will affect us. So that we want to avoid this at any cost, by all means. By blaspheming the supremely pure Lord Mahadev, Prajapati Daksha, the best of ascetics, met with severe inauspiciousness. And as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 10.4.46, my dear king, when a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, what does that mean?
Duration of life?
Yeah. Long life. So by persecuting great souls, one's duration of life is reduced. All his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. The conclusion of this essay is this. Whatever prajalpa is not favorable for devotional service should carefully be given up by Vaishnavas who are cultivating bhakti. And, again, one should discuss only what is favorable. There's one other point which I think is worth mentioning, and that is that sometimes there are disagreements between superior devotees, and the acharyas and scriptures advise us that we should not take sides, because if we take sides, we will end up committing offenses. We should excuse ourselves from that controversy and just say, they're advanced devotees, they're higher than I am, and who am I to judge? And don't entertain it. Don't entertain it, because you very likely will end up committing offenses. Another situation will arise when a person sort of, it's like they want to talk to you, but you don't know what's going to come out. Sometimes that happens. But you don't want to reject the person, you don't want to make the person feel bad. But you also want to, for your sake or for his sake or for both, you want to keep the topic congenial. So in such a case, Radhanath Swami told me this. In such a case, you say, I'm so glad you came, it's so nice to spend time with you. But I have to finish my rounds. Can you, would you like to join me in chanting japa? Or I have to finish my three chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. Would you like to read the Bhagavad Gita with me? Or, you know, and they'll either join you or leave. And it's okay either way. So that's also there. We don't want devotees to feel like unwanted or unloved, but we, at the same time, we don't want them to degrade themselves by talking about others or to affect us by talking about others unnecessarily. So try to. And there was one devotee in Los Angeles named Gauri Dasi. She was a great book distributor and a wonderful devotee. And I heard whenever someone would approach her, like, "Oh, did you hear about so-and-so?" She would say, "Oh, yeah, that's the one who distributed so many books. Oh, yeah. That's, she's such a great devotee and servant of Srila Prabhupada." And just like before I can go any further, turn it into appreciation and glorification of the devotee. So that's our Vajra-vega controlling the speech. And so I mean, I'm so how to say, I guess we're in a somewhat fluid schedule here. But even otherwise, I think I have about 10 minutes left. And then Madhava Prabhu and Radhika will continue the kirtan. So do any of you have any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, you said, you read from the book that Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, a dhira person, he controls his senses as well as controls the world. What is the meaning of controlling the world? What is going to be interested in controlling the world?
Yes, controlling the world means sort of like what I said, that most people who want something material, I mean, most people do want something material, and if they want something material, then they'll come under the control of whoever they feel can give them what they want materially. It may happen like Srila Prabhupada told this story that He was in a discourse by his Guru Maharaj, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and a person sitting next to Abhay, as he was called then, you know, started to talk to him, and Abhay naturally sort of turned to him, and then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta stopped speaking, and then he said to Abhay, "Would you like to come up here and give the discourse?" And then he said to the person next to him, who was next to Abhay, "You know, don't think that because of your monthly donation to the month that you've purchased me." In other words, if we depend on anything other than Krishna, in other words, if we depend on something of the material world, then we come under the control of those things. And if we don't, you know, we can control ourselves, Vajra-vega Manasa-krodha-vega, then as Vishaheta-dhira, he becomes sober and he's qualified to make disciples all over the world. So making disciples all over the world doesn't mean that he controls them in a material way, you know, for his sense gratification. But he does control them in the sense that he gives them good guidance how to serve the Parampara and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. So in that sense, good question. Yes?
Maharaj, you briefly talked about having to interact with people at workplaces because, I mean, you need to socialize to do well at your job. And maybe that was one of the exceptions. Can you elaborate on to what extent are we supposed to, or should we indulge in non-Krishna conscious talks with our colleagues at work?
Yes. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that in your workplace, and it could also apply to students, you know, in regular mundane institutions, that these prohibitions do not mean that you cannot, you know, be polite in a normal course of affairs. You're polite, but you don't really disclose your mind to them about spiritual topics. You don't take their advice about spiritual topics. And, you know, there's so many different situations, but, you know, sometimes they'll expect you to, whatever, you know, they'll have the annual Christmas party in the office, and, you know, there's so many varieties of social demands or expectations. There's one devotee in Mumbai named Srinath Chidas, quite a big industrialist. And so it was just part of his business. He had to go to these parties, you know, cocktail parties. And he said he used to go, and he'd say, I don't take alcohol. Oh, why not? What's wrong with it? And I was like, you know, I don't eat meat, fish, or... Well, why not? You know, God created those things for us to eat. So it wasn't going very well. So then he changed his approach. So whenever there was an event like that, he'd phone ahead and he would say, you know, you've invited me to this event and I really want to come, but I have to tell you that I have a terrible food allergy and I can't eat meat, fish, or eggs. And immediately, oh, you poor thing. Well, what can you eat? Just tell us what you can eat. We'll make something special for you. That's completely different. And then when he'd get there, he'd go to the cocktail bar before anyone had a chance. And he'd get an empty cocktail glass and pour 7-Up in it or something and put a couple of ice cubes and a cherry or something to make it look like champagne or whatever. And he'd walk around carrying that. And he'd go, okay, it's so good. It's like one of us. So, yes. Like Prabhupada said, you should know the art of catching the big fish without getting wet. So, yeah. I know, it's a common problem, and you have to find your way to sort of do the minimum you have to so that you can carry on with your work or your studies or whatever, but at the same time not compromise, you know, important principles. Because any of those things, you know, imbibing alcohol or... It does affect your consciousness. And when you're really focusing on the holy name and really learning what it means to fix your mind on the holy name, then you know how... Then you want to regulate everything so that it's favorable for that. You know, accept what's favorable and reject what's unfavorable. But sometimes we do have to do those things. And but the idea is the minimum. And you have to be sincere, you know, not like, you know, if I don't watch the Super Bowl and drink here and eat whatever they eat, you know, I won't be able to work with them. You know, really what you, the minimum. But yeah. And you know, if you're sincere, that's the main thing. If you're sincere, Krishna will help. I'm sure you are. Yes?
When someone fails on the path of bhakti, do they lose their seed of devotion? Is it completely gone? Or?
Oh. When someone fails? Yeah, well, there's also a good question to ask. If someone fails in the course of bhakti, does he lose the seed of devotion? Well, basically, the Bhagavad Gita says that whatever advancement you make, it is not lost. But there are different reasons causes why a person will fall down. And the most common is sensual weakness. You know, if someone's weak sensually and, you know, breaks the principles, his progress will be hampered. But it's not that serious in the sense that he can continue. There's a beautiful verse in the 11th canto in which Krishna says to Uddhava that his devotee is convinced that all sense gratification leads to misery. And he resolves not to engage in sense gratification. But still, because of past habit or conditioning or weakness, he fails. So Lord Krishna says that devotee should continue the process of devotional service in a happy mood. Why in a happy mood? Because the devotee knows that Krishna's there. And he knows that with Krishna's mercy, he'll be able to overcome any weakness. And he's confident of Krishna's mercy sooner or later. And that's where dhairya comes in, patience. You know, his mood is Krishna may be merciful in this life, or in the next life, or in the next 100 lives. But he will be merciful. And I will not do anything but serve Krishna. So, the fall downs caused by offenses are more serious, and they can really make you weak. But even then, there's hope. You know, by chanting, and in the case of Vaishnava aparad, if you're in a position, just go to the Vaishnava and beg forgiveness. And if you're not in a position, like if the person's no longer physically present, and you know, internally you can go to those who are near and dear to that Vaishnava who's no longer physically present and try to please them, you know, confide in them. There's always hope. There's always hope. But that one is really something that we should avoid, like the plague. I mean, that's the whole topic. The whole topic of this talk. But it's now, it's never lost. It's sort of like whatever service you do, you get like a sort of a spiritual credit. But you may not have access to that credit. It's there, but it's not doing you any good because you don't have access to it. But you can regain your access to it by whatever the recommended method is for the particular cause of your fall down. Very good question.
Mark, you can cover a third aspect of the philosophical deviation also?
Yeah, philosophical. Maybe you can tell us. Yes, yes, yes. Yes, philosophical deviations. Well, that usually leads to offenses. You know, it's like yeah. I think the conclusion is that it's never that there's always hope. That's the conclusion. There's always hope. No matter what you've done, there's always hope you can come back. But at the same time, we shouldn't take advantage of that, but we should really be very, very, very careful not to do anything that will upset our wholesome equilibrium. Okay, last question, then Madhava Prabhu will carry on.
Yeah, sometimes we did like family members who would like to talk about so many other things happening. So how do we
stay awake? Family members. Yes, he's... You know, we're talking about avoiding prajalpa. And so one example is in the workplace. But another example is with family members. And that can be even more complicated. What has your experience taught you? Yeah. See, again, there's like degrees. You know, it's like if you can find something of common interest, even if it's not directly Krishna, of course, in the vision of a devotee, Krishna's everywhere. I mean, nothing is outside of Krishna. But find something of common interest that doesn't involve criticizing others. Something where you can relate, but it's not going to involve criticizing others. That would be the main thing. And, you know, like, it's also an offense to preach to the faithless. So sometimes younger devotees, in their enthusiasm, they try to, like, preach to their parents or other family members. And that may not work if there's like no faith. And once I was on a, I invited my parents and sister, they met me in India. And we were on a flight to Kashmir, actually, at that time we could fly to Srinagar. And I had the idea of somehow I brought up the content of the book Easy Journey to Other Planets. You know, it's sort of written in a scientific language, and you know, my father was sort of rational and, you know, empirical. And so I started talking to him about how you can travel to other planets by yoga. And he looked at me like, son, I was worried about you before. And I thought, you know, if I continue in this line, it's just going to get worse. So then I realized, like, it's against our principles, you know, to preach to the faithless. So, you can find a way to engage them, try to find some way to engage them in a way that they don't mind or they might like it. And Ratanapati Swami told me how, like, he and his mother, when he first joined, like, they would always end up fighting about Krishna consciousness. So then they made a deal that he won't try to convert her, but she won't criticize what he's doing. And then after that, it was okay, you know. So, yeah, sometimes you have to agree to disagree. But as I go into, I said in the morning, there will be obstacles. And one of the 26 qualities of the devotee, one of the definitions of expert is to always remember Krishna in every situation. Maybe one last story, and you know, it's not really good to give ourselves as an example, but. So one year before I was about to leave for India, this was, you know, within the last 10 years. So my sister made a feast, and she, like a farewell party, and she invited all the cousins and, you know, family members. And so, you know, she made dal and, like, everything she thought I would like, just according to my dal. And it turned out to be Ekadasi. And, you know, I thought one of the other devotees would have told her. She knows about Ekadasi, but no one told her. So we sat down, and oh my gosh. So, you know, there was quite a bit of pressure, you know, like, what's the big deal? Within my heart, I knew I couldn't do it. It wouldn't be good. So I began, like, glorifying the plate of prasad, you know, like, the beautiful colors, the texture, you know, the arrangement, and then my cousin, he's like a family therapist, and so he's sort of into mindfulness and things. He said, "Wow, this is like, that's like such a great description you gave. That's like real mindfulness." And you know, I had what I could, you know, vegetables. And then, I forget exactly what happened later, but something really good happened. And I think either my cousin or my brother-in-law, but one of them said that, you know, because you didn't compromise on your principle, you got this reward. Like, they made that connection. So, you know, I felt like vindicated. So, I think we have to draw a line somewhere. But try to be as pleasing as you can without violating any of our basic principles. And yeah, Krishna helps everyone. When someone appreciates a devotee, they make advancement. Like Srila Prabhupada said, if someone is just looking out their window and they see devotees walking down the street, and they think, oh, those people look very nice, they make advancement. Yeah. Ratanpati Swami recently dyed his clothes. He was staying with me in Santa Barbara. And it was like really a beautiful color. I told him I was getting orange envy. The cloth was such a nice color. And, you know, where so many places he went, or we went, or he went, people were complimenting him and saying that it's like such a beautiful color, and you know that, and so they make advancement. If they appreciate a devotee for any reason, they make advancement. And if you do a good turn, like I remember when I was in Sri Lanka in Colombo, I would take the bus back then. But if there was ever like an elderly person, you know, I'd always like get up and offer my seat on the bus, and people would appreciate it. And just by appreciating, they make advancement. So try to, you know, let's try to make people happy. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai.